Welcome to Woomera Stories, Part 1. Woomera Stories features historic and recent audio recordings with refugees and activists recorded from protests and breakouts at the Woomera Detention Centre in 2002. Archival audio is from Scar TV and Journeyman, featuring music from Combat Wombat, Monkey Mark and the Emily soundtrack.
There are now 189 people on hunger strike. 62 have sewn their lips together, including two women and five children. For Woomera, this isn't an unusual day.
We have an old saying in Persia that says there is no darker color than black. So we were in the camp, we have two options. Either deporting us to back to persecution, to prison, to death, or die in the camp. But I think you guys give us a third option, which is another try.
They bent like half-cooked spaghetti. We didn't expect it to happen like that, to the soundtrack of Amelie, a popular French movie at the time, blowing across the desert from dusty speakers. The fence began to fall, under the weight of people wanting justice, under the weight of people that had had enough. It's hard to remember the exact sequence of events as it all seemed to happen very quickly.
The protesters began arriving here this afternoon. Already they've set up camp only 200 metres from the Woomera Detention Centre's main gate.
Yeah, I got there, I think, late Thursday afternoon with some of the logistics people and stuff like that and started drawing up the rough idea of what a little city could be. And then we got raided. Wasn't exactly the middle of the night, but it was not a very good time to get raided. When I got there on the Thursday, one of the first things we did, we went and had a look from a distance. And honestly, seeing those kids, because they're like 2 or 3 year old, and they've got people, not what I call stiers, with full automatic weapons and stuff like that, guarding them. That really fucking made me think, nah, man, this place has got to go, it's got to be torn down, got to do anything. Yeah.
I jumped into a friend's car, heading to the Woomera protest, expecting it to be like other protests I'd been to. Instead, it became a life-changing experience. I did not expect the fences to come down. I did not expect to come face to face with men crying and cutting their bodies on the razor wire, pleading for freedom. I watched refugees climb out the hole in the fence and being chased into the desert by cops. I decided I would help the next person to jump, and that's how I met Ali.
Activists came and they were flying the kites. You know, the kites came over the camp, we could see it, and they would ring us and then the phone, and they said, oh, we are with you, don't worry. You know, we know how bad is the government, how racist is the government, but we are here. Don't be alone. We were amazed, like, how many people came and how much, you know, there is care for us. Yeah, it was lots of people. It was amazing to see, you know, these different characters came and they were pushing the fence. We were just like watching.
Cool. Did you jump through then or?
No, I was busy talking to the girls behind the fence. They were like, oh, where are you from? What do you need? I said, oh, I need to get out of here. But one of them, they sent me a Pink Floyd CD, which is, I might still have it. I don't know.
Two years, I am human, no animal.
How long did you stay here?
2 years.
Yes,
for what? And terrorists.
Where are you from?
Iran.
Iran.
I don't have a country. Australia, my country. I cannot come back to my country.
I know.
Australia, my country.
And next thing we knew, there were people saying, let us out. And this was not what supposedly was planned. We had some contacts inside there. One person had a mobile phone, and that wasn't what the rough idea was going to be. We had some wire cutter type things that we were going to be throwing over. Yet again, they had not yet been thrown over. And people just started trying to get out. And then some of the protesters thought, well, you know, there's a big wire fence here that we don't really like. I hate to blow the illusion, but we didn't need to tear that one down, quite honestly. But it was damn good fun, and it got people in the right mood. The real fences were the slatted ones that were difficult, and the refugees were ingenious in their own ways of getting out and through that sort of stuff. But that was not the way any of us thought it might happen. Suddenly there was like four or five guys just basically sprinting back to the camp. So I ran as fast as I could get back to the camp because I realised, well, there's nobody at the camp and nobody's ready for anyone to hide. Most of us had tents up, so that would be cool.
I think I'd been looking for a phone box when I saw the initial movement from the camp of people strolling towards the detention centre. I casually joined the movement, curious but completely unaware of what was about to unfold. Ahead, I could see people climbing the fence, and to our surprise, under the weight, it bent. We clambered over, getting closer and closer to the main fence, where the refugees had already breached the compound and got past the rolls of razor wire. With another piece of fence, they levered the bars and within seconds were jumping into the crowd. It was as if they were stage diving at a rock concert, and all we could do was catch them. And then they ran. Another one, young men, old men, women and children, two brothers who were only 11 or 12 at the time, and who I was destined to meet again, jumping through the fence into the crowd of open arms and running. People escorted them back towards the camp as more people came. It was a mosh pit of police and protesters and refugees. It all happened so quickly, even the police were totally overwhelmed and confused, and it took them minutes to actually comprehend what was happening. This was a mass escape of refugees from the most notorious desert detention centre. The fences were down. There was no turning back on this momentous moment of history.
I made use of the chaos to take Ali back to my tent and ask around for some different clothes and scissors for a new hairstyle. I found a friend willing to drive us out of camp soon afterwards. Ali found a good hiding spot in the car and we left quickly while it was still in chaos. Every single car that passed us on the highway that evening were cop cars, one after the other for hours.
Police cleared the crowd and rounded up any stragglers. We made our way back to the camp. The organic nature of the event left people reeling, as none of this had been planned, for at least not expected on the first day of the event. Some friends moved fast. They got people in cars and got them out of there. Back roads to New South Wales, Victoria and beyond. Luckily, the establishment is not as spontaneous, giving many a brief window to escape before roadblocks and helicopters were deployed. I gathered with a group that was surrounding maybe one or more refugees as human shields to a group of encroaching police. Miraculously, the standoff lasted long enough for the refugee to swap clothes with people in the crowd and to dissolve them into the throng of protesters, so that when we dispersed, there was no one to be found. I'm sure there are many wild tales from that day, especially of those that escaped and the connections made in the midst of the intensity and mayhem.
So I kitted up in my white overalls and bits of padded armour and my helmet and mask and stuff like that. This is basically, quite honestly, we scared off that hate of those PSOs who just presented very strongly and started doing the whole hey, move forward. And then the buses came from, I think it was Melbourne, mainly Melbourne, and a couple of other places. Basically, three buses all came at the same time. Suddenly, there's an extra, you know, nearly 200 people, and the cops did not know what to do.
I do recall there being much debate, some advocates insisting the refugees should return to Woomera so as not to jeopardise their chances of immigration, others hiding people in their camps and vehicles. In the end, many returned to Woomera in fear and confusion that followed. I was not privy to any of the meetings between organisers, so I cannot comment on that, but there were certainly mixed opinions as to how to handle the situation.
And on the Saturday, there was a whole thing about whether they would be coming through the camp and searching or not. So on Saturday night, I went out into the desert, walked about an hour out into the middle of nothing, and then set a lighter hole with the stuff. And just out there alone with the stars and this really, really bright fire burning and everything that had been going on, chasing the cops and shit like that, I had this real wonderful moment of what is sometimes known as Satori, that I was in exactly the right place at exactly the right time.
We made it through the roadblock and into Adelaide. We had a safe place to stay, and then Ali and I got the overnight bus to Melbourne, even though I lived in Sydney at the time. As I didn't have enough money for two bus tickets to Sydney, we stayed at a friend's house in Melbourne, but could only stay one night as there was police raids on the places connected. I didn't really have a plan, but Ali seemed to trust me, and we travelled indirectly to Sydney, moving each day. We received help from friends and friends of friends in the form of accommodation, transport and money.
I've been involved in a lot of actions, and this is probably the biggest direct action. Some people went along there to protest. I didn't. I went along to get people out, and we got people out. So that was a successful direct action as far as I'm concerned. So I think, yeah, being creative is actually the thing. And I don't think the cops expect... I don't know whether the cops had any suspicion that we were going to try and get people out. But yeah, it was, as you say, a surprise and spontaneity. And I mean, the thing is, like, we were sort of prepared, and a whole heap of people, we had some sort of stuff set up back in Melbourne and some other places just in case, but we didn't expect that many people.
I can't remember if it was the same day or the following that we went back to the fence. This time the police were ready and picked us off like flies. Most people were driven back to camp or dumped out on the highway. Unfortunately for me, I was known to the local police after previous protests at Roxby. I was arrested and told I had a warrant for a traffic offence. I was taken to Woomera Watch House in the divvy van via a dirt road through the desert. This journey became integral to a future breakout. I was placed in a cell with maybe 30 plus refugees. We were there for many hours. We chanted, rapped and sang. We beat on the floors, walls and doors. Our fate was uncertain, but the vibe was electric, sad but also strong. After dark, we were handcuffed with cable ties and put on a coach to Port Augusta. My mind is rarely inhibited by logic or danger, so as I sat on the bus with maybe 40 refugees, two cops and a bus driver, I imagined a wild plan. If I could hijack the bus, chuck the cops out in the desert with no phone range and take the bus back roads to Queensland, we might be in with a chance. I was up for anything, young and perhaps a little reckless. I squeezed my hands out of my handcuffs and made eye contact with the other passengers and explained in sign language what I was thinking. I looked into their tired eyes, so tired. The last 24 hours had been an emotional rollercoaster, with a glimpse of freedom only to be thrown into a new chapter of incarceration. The officer on the bus bent down to pick something up off the floor. His arse, gun and holster centimetres from my unconstrained hands. I looked at the man opposite me, and with tired eyes, he shook his head. I stopped and waited. The moment passed. The bus roared on through the night. I don't even remember stepping off the bus or what happened to the others.
Yeah, it was basically a time for me to be myself in a real way. I mean, if you haven't been in those sorts of places like the village, little village at S11 or the village at Woomera or stuff like that, we were totally autonomous. We were looking after ourselves. I mean, we had some marshals and I ended up being one of the marshals, but that was just because there ended up being so many people, more than we were expecting. We can run our lives really well in what some people would call chaos. And it's just a matter of us treating each other a decent way, and we're encouraged to treat each other a decent way.
In Sydney, Ali had his first chance to relax, and we had a picnic at the Botanic Gardens to celebrate his freedom. He was happy to be free, but it was also unexpected, and he needed to think about what next. His dream was New Zealand, By now, most of the refugees who escaped were back in detention, and Ali was one of the 13 who was still free. But it was only a limited freedom, as he was always under the threat of being caught. We decided it would be better if he didn't stay at my house too long in case I got identified from video footage. Ali moved into a quiet share house with some friends of mine who weren't activists but who were supportive of refugees. Here he had time and space and support to improve his English, learn more about life in Australia and process his journey so far. One day, when we were shopping together at Paddy's Market, one of the storeholders recognised him as Hazara and started talking to him and gave him contact details. Ali was able to get some regular cash work through the friends he had made, as well as make connections with others from his community. After about a year, he had to leave the share house, and I managed to rent an apartment for him and another refugee who had escaped. Then one night, a few months later, they came to my house as immigration had come to their door looking for someone. The immigration officer asked to see their papers, and the men gave an excuse. The officials left but were suspicious, and the apartment was no longer safe. They moved out immediately. In the end, Ali moved in with friends from the Hazara community. After about 2 years, I left to travel overseas and said goodbye. Unfortunately, I lost contact after that and didn't ever move back to Sydney and have visited only once. I often thought about him, but we were so careful not to get caught, it was hard to know where to start to find him. 10 years later, I was told that all 13 men had made their asylum claims, and after being temporarily detained, they were now living freely in the community as recognised refugees.
I remember waking up alone in the holding cell at the Port Augusta police station. I would spend the next 3 days and nights studying the movement of a group of ants. There was no court over the Easter weekend, so I would have to wait to find out what my warrant for deserving traffic offences were and what happened to the people I'd spent such a short but intense time with only the day before. The ants were my blessing, the only organic moving thing in this sterile box. I had time to reflect, to be angry, sad and amazed, and haunted, always haunted by the ones that didn't get away. I'm sorry.
They leave pets, they leave smell of the town, they leave the food, they leave literally everything. So if they leave, they're not really, that's not what they want. That's what they have to do. So in Australia, it's a bloody big country. Let them come. You know, they're not going to take care. They work. I know lots of people. I know lots of refugees. I run the community program in Melbourne, and 99% of my players, they come, or asylum seekers or refugees, they all work. They work. They pay tax. They don't do anything dodgy. And again, they find people. They're welders, they're skillful people, the painters. They're not doing anything wrong. And Australia's a big, big country. Let them come.
Excellent. And if you had a message to the refugees that were in Woomera at that time, if you could talk to them right now, what would you say?
Good on you for sticking it out. You may well think this country hates you. I definitely don't. You know, there's people here that welcome you to share in what we have.
8305 1323. Now, Izzy. Is it Izzy or Lizzie?
Izzy.
Izzy?
Yeah.
What is Izzy short for?
For Isabella.
Isabella, it's a lovely name.
Cheers.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was just ringing up in reference to a caller that called quite a while back referring to Woomera.
Yes.
And I was actually there working as an independent journalist through a community television station from Melbourne.
Well,
and
you...
the fact that it got out of control is due to pure emotion of people so desperate that they were prepared to do anything for their freedom.
Yeah, well, bugger them. Let them not be there.
Well, that's easier said than done. If your home was being bombed by NATO, by America, if you lived in a village and your children...
You're a very left-wing lady, aren't you?
I'm just a human. I don't characterise myself as left wing or white wing. All I know is I care about other human beings, and I don't believe they should be incarcerated just because they want to live and want to have freedom.
Well, you let those people into our community and you'll have a million on your doorstep overnight.
Who are you? Are you not a boat person? Did your parents not come by plane or boat? Unless you're an Aboriginal person, you are a boat person as well.
This is my point. This is the point I've always made.
The fact that you might not be black, the fact you might not be Arab, that's just a racist... That's just a racist thing if you think they're any different from you.
Izzy, what I'm saying to you is this. This is our country. It is not their country. We
this
have
is Aboriginal land, man. You
this is
what?
Not Aboriginal land. Do you know what happened?
It was Aboriginal land long before you got here, any of your family got here, anyone you know got here. This is Aboriginal land first.
Izzy, do you know what happened?
And the white invaders came next. And the fact if you're Arab, Asian, white, doesn't matter. You're all people, so why can't we live together? You know, that's bullshit.
Wait, now, what I'm saying to you is, in 1788, there were three ships that arrived in Sydney Cove.
Yes.
Well, Port Jackson.
And before that, there was over 52 Aboriginal tribes with over 100 different dialects that lived in this country.
Now, can you see the lesson that the Aboriginal people learnt, that three boats didn't seem to be too important, but they lost their country. They lost their country. We arrived and took their country. Now, if you want these people...
See, that's the mentality of that race, isn't it? Of white people to come and colonise and take their country.
Whole lot of people irate, wait now. Incarcerate, good, penetrate, blow! Knock down the fence, bring sound effects loud. Pick up a crowd with a vow not to bow down. To predicament, implemented on the innocent with intent evident. Better the plight, squirt by a government impotent to ever see in the light. Interested only in money that's feeding the right. Wing of a vulture culture killing them too. Only one you'll ever see now is in the zoo. With the nature of man seeming damned to follow suit. Tell me how long do them come to cage you?
Refugee.
It's weird, disappeared without a trace. It is clear the fear in their eyes, saying their goodbyes. On the boat, watch it flip away. Destiny, foreign invaders, stay captive, active. Fight for survival, illegal arrival. They say go back to where you come from. Face the barrel of a gun, running over razor wire fences. Up to pretenses, defences of the white Australia policy. Let's see the idiocy behind the media. Minister of Immigration, masturbation of Rolex rhetoric of rubbish, publish bullshit in the media. Fake photos to tease your home. You starve alone as lips are sewn together. Starve alone behind bars, thinking no one knows where you are. Port Hedland to Woomera.
I often ponder if assisting Ali to escape to live illegally was helpful. Ali did express his gratitude, but we were both aware he was still in a vulnerable situation, which we couldn't change. I couldn't see it happening any other way, though. There was no way I could have turned my back on the men at that fence in Woomera. We were both just responding to the situations as they arose. We were lucky, and I think we were both grateful for this, and for all the good people who helped us along the way. Since I was told that he'd received permanent protection, I felt more sure that it was the right thing to do. But I wish I could ask Ali again to hear what he thought. For me, it was empowering to know I could use my connections and knowledge to make a difference. Even though I couldn't really share what I was doing, my belief in myself, which had been very low, grew. It was also heartening to see grassroots community action work. My confidence in this and what it is possible to achieve also grew. It is telling that in my quest to free another, I found my own sense of agency.
Know you take people, lock them up forever on some brute, lethal fear campaign, bureaucratic mental bricks of rhetoric and blame.
blame. For the folks off the boat seeking freedom from stripes and human rights, why else would they be risking their life? All I know is it's outrageous when courageous sons and daughters crossing waters now living in cages for ages, waiting while we conversating, arguing, debating on what's the real Australian or who's just faking or not assimilating more. Who's on the roof, hunger striking till their life abort? While circle goes berserker with their pepper spray, politicking politicians wishing it would go away, but the issue sustains as long as people do manage to escape the weight of a dictator's boot. To be processed and held hostage by attitudes, we all vote people in less indigenous group, many whom still treated like refugees on their own land.
Intervention
down under and underhand, it ain't just here, we know it's many places.
True.
Plenty worse, serving up a racist matrix, claiming case review on an individual basis, feeding prison CEO individual pay slips as days rip to gears on the calendar, tension builds and builders till Christmas becomes a attica. So add it up, we got enough space here to house a bit more action, compassion, and less tears before the overseers equating life with the lotto. Indiscriminate, indeterminate, incommunicado be the motto of the policy employed, but that ain't good enough for our future to be enjoyed. How about we take people, welcome them like we would want next sequel, balance like the equinox. The truth is lethal for the ones who want it caged up, placed behind barbed wire, wired up with that same old hate, evil, xenophobic, paranoia. Take people, lock them up forever on some brute, lethal fear campaign, bureaucratic mental bricks of rhetoric and blame. Though we all equal, rarely does it manifest when more people living under mad oppression, fenced in, denied their request for the wicked, no rest nor for us to protest.
Breaks my heart to leave you, I grieve too. Every soul I pass through, they can't come to. In a box watching the clock, cell block, you know I feel you. In a camp waiting a stamp to go, but only where they say so. I know you pray to, you wanna run away too. From the pain, can't explain, we're detained, verging on the insane, the same blood in our veins. Why can't I go, but you still remain, still remain, still remain. So many people, I know we're all equal, but the hand of life dealt you skeletal. I don't wanna leave you to die, depression, violence, suicide, on the inside, behind razor wire teeth, wide red tape, hands tied, souls in limbo, lost in others' lies. These are human beings, can you hear their cries? Hear their cry.
Hate, evil, xenophobia, paranoia, take people, lock them up behind barbed wire, liars on a fear campaign, bureaucratic static keeps us battling the same. Though we all equal, rarely does it manifest when more and more people living under mad duress get left, denied all control. That's why we gon' make the system fold for no more cold. Hate, evil, xenophobia, paranoia, take people, lock them up forever on some brute, lethal, fear campaign, bureaucratic mental bricks of rhetoric and blame. Though we all equal, rarely does it manifest when more and more people living under mad oppression get held, denied their request in jail, all because they fled their living hell.
Woomera Stories was produced on the stolen land of the Kulin Nation. Sovereignty never ceded.